being that I've been discussing tefillah, so we're going to return to tefillah. My grandson's bris was yesterday, so it was a couple of days out. So as we transition from the Beis HaMikdash to Golus, and the first Golus is Golus Babel, and Golus Babel teaches us about the model of Golus, so tefillah obviously becomes much more central, because there's no korbanos, and tefillah replaces korbanos. Now, did people daven in the first Beis HaMikdash? Of course they did. The Medrash says there were hundreds and hundreds of Batei Knesses in Yerushalayim. So obviously you could daven even when there was a Beis HaMikdash. But the center of gravity shifts to davening when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So we want to pay close attention to how tefillah evolves, not just in the pre-Har Sinai moments of our Avos, which we spent a lot of attention, and in Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillos, but in Daniel's tefillah. So Daniel's tefillah is really fascinating because, well, first of all, it's the first moment of anti-Semitism. I mean, it's hard to trace the first moment of anti-Semitism. Was it Esav? Was it Mitzrayim? Was it Lavan? But you see a pattern of anti-Semitism rearing its head for the first time, where all the people in Paras and Mandai are jealous of Daniel because he had been promoted and he had been graduated. He was close to the king, close to the Babylonian king, close to the Paras and Mandai kings. So they looked for some libel to rat him out to the king and get him into trouble. So this was the first blood libel. It wasn't a blood libel. It's not that they claimed that he was drinking the blood of little children. We're talking about Daniel's tefillah. But they came to the king and they said, the Persian king, they said, he is davening three times a day to Yerushalayim, and therefore let's make a rule that you can't daven to anyone but the Persian king. So essentially it's another pattern of anti-Semitism. So anti-Semitism always had different heads to the Hydra, heads to the monster. One of the mechanisms of anti-Semitism was to try to persecute Jews legally and then hide behind the law, which is a little bit of what's happening today in The Hague and in the International Court of Justice. It's not like we're anti-Semites, we're just trying the Jews under normal international rules of law. So they didn't say, let's kill Daniel. Let's do this through law. Let's make a legal process of it. A little bit like Haman. There's a lot of parallels between Seva and Daniel and Haman, which Daniel happens in the beginning of Golus, Esther and Mordechai happen in the end of the Golus. So they make a law and a rule that you're not allowed to daven. Basically, it's an anti-Jewish legislation, but it's phrased as a generic social law that applies to everyone. Anyway, Daniel is unwavering, and he davens with the windows open. I'm not going to read the psukim because Sefer Daniel is written in Aramaic, so the psukim are very, very hard to read, so I'll just describe the story to you. It's in Perek Vav. And he throws the windows open, the windows wide open, which shows two things. Why are the windows open? And why does Daniel have to make an issue of it? Just daven quietly. In theory, you could make the claim that he shouldn't have davened because there's no din of Yaharik Vel Yavar for tefillah. If a guy puts a gun to your head and says, don't daven to Hashem today, you shouldn't daven. If a guy puts a gun to your head and says, worship of Avodah Zarah, you have to die. So Daniel, there was a rule, there was a death sentence decreed, you shouldn't have daven. So obviously, it's a Gzeres Hashmad, it's a Rasha, and you can make all the halacha claims, but why invite trouble? Why throw the windows wide open? And part of the answer is because, well, first of all, tefillah is also instructive. We take tefillah for granted because we live thousands of years after monotheism has already stuck to the human imagination and the concept of prayer is already well established in human religions. But it wasn't so. And they didn't pray to their gods. They didn't talk to their gods. They sacrificed to their gods. They created magic potions. They bribed their gods. They threw virgins on the altar to give to their gods. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, in various levels, in Parshas Va'era and Bo, davens to Hashem, primarily in Tzvardeah and Barad. Remember in Tzvardeah, he says, I'll daven now that the Tzvardeah should stop tomorrow. Why doesn't he just daven now that that stops now, or daven tomorrow that's what that starts tomorrow? Why is Moshe playing this game? He's trying to teach Paro, and through Paro, the entire world, that you can talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu the same way, Kival Yachol, you talk to a human being. And it's not just, when I offer a bribe, I can't control the situation. When I say a bribe, I'm just trying to make you happy, then you decide. When I talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I talk to you, I say, do me a favor, I'm speaking to you now at 10 o'clock, come back and speak later. So we can be precise and we can have a conversation. So Moshe teaches Paro many things about tefillah. We're not going to get into Be'er and Bo. So Daniel wants to teach these Persians, who aren't yet fully monotheistic, what tefillah is. But part of it is that tefillah is defines it. When it's you davens, no matter where you are, especially when you daven in Chutzar, so when you daven in itself, it's not who you define. You live with your people. But some of my most meaningful davenings, when I daven in airports around the world, and I don't really have a minion, I'm not trying to defy people in a rebellious way, but I'm trying to show my pride. I'm trying to show people who, for the first time, may see a pious man talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and maybe inspiring them. They may laugh at me. Probably 80% laugh or make comments. I don't know, but so there's an element of defiance in tefillah, in Daniel's tefillah, and of course he gets thrown into the lion's den which shows us to the lion's cave, which shows us what that nature of defiance was. Now, what's also interesting about Daniel is that he davens three times a day. We don't have anyone davening three times a day before Daniel. Remember, Avram davened once a day. We don't see him davening mincha. Did Yitzchak adopt Avram Shachris plus mincha? We don't really know. He davened mincha. Yaakov davened Marav. So until Daniel, we don't know that davening was three times a day. Daniel was the first to daven three times a day. And to institute davening, as I say before, I've said so many times, davening should be passionate, and it should be internal, it should be authentic. All that is true. But you're not always going to have kavana. You're not always going to be on your game. You're not always going to have your mind. But it's three times a day checking in with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Three times a day, it's part of your cycle, part of your habit, part of your routine. And Daniel made it part of his routine. Even when the king came to him before Marav and begged him, because the king was his friend, he said, please don't daven, because then I'll have to throw you into the lion's cave. Please, just don't daven. I got to daven. So it indicates how much of a routine it was for Daniel just to daven three times a day. The other aspect you see with Daniel, which obviously he's the first, is he faces Yerushalayim, even though he's in Persia. So he turns out of the window and he faces Yerushalayim, which becomes the source of why we face Yerushalayim. But also, when everyone sees this, part of what makes Jews so, the Jewish experience so abrasive to our hosts is, let me put it this way, the world tolerates those who don't want to join society. So you have all these documentaries on television about the Aborigines in Australia, or about those who live in the Amazon forests, or the Amish, or the people who don't want to join modernity, whatever modernity means at that point. They're secessionists. They want to build their own society. It's quaint. It's cute. We respect them. We give them their own culture. The Jews, on the one hand, want to be insular and can maintain their own identity, their own culture, but they don't want to remain outside of society. We're a part of society. We lead society. And that's what makes our experience so confusing to non-Jews and to Gentiles and to our haters, so frustrating. Make up your mind. If you want to lead us and inspire us, then become part of us. If you don't want to become part of us, then remain on the sidelines and live in the Amazon jungle or live in Williamsburg or live in your ghettos. But this complexity where Jews become part of society in science, in politics, in social justice, in technology, in spirit, and now politically we're part of this world, but yet you don't want to join us in our dietary laws and in our customs, and you walk around with a kippah on your head, and you wear strange things on your head, and your laws are different, you don't want to intermarry. That's at the heart of anti-Semitism, or one of the core aspects of anti-Semitism. And of course, that's Hashem's challenge to us. He wants Avram to be an Afamon Goyim, to inspire the world, but also to be different by branding his body as different. You don't inspire the world by joining the world. You inspire the world by representing something different that challenges them to higher ground. So Daniel is really one of the first people. He looks at Yerushalayim and it really bothers people. You're here in Persia. You're here in Babylonia, wherever it was. Stop looking back to Yerushalayim. And throughout our history, we always look back wherever Jew live. I belong in Yerushalayim. Shana Bab Yerushalayim Habaniya. Next year in Yerushalayim. Next year in Yerushalayim. So it always create. And that this whole claim of dual citizenship and dual loyalty, and you're not really a South African, and you're not really an Australian, you're not really an American, because there's truth to it. Again, we don't intend it in a belligerent and deceitful fashion. We just know that we have two identities. We have a particularistic identity and a universalistic identity. Our identity is to be Jews and to desire Yerushalayim and to also care about the world. And ultimately, those two should merge. The reason that we're Jews is because we care about the world. The reason we care about the world is because we're Jews. But ultimately, it's going to be two parts of our identity. It's going to be an internalization and an externalization. And you see that in Daniel's davening. Okay? Tomorrow, Chassidus. Have a good day, everyone. Tomorrow, Chassidus.